You are Locked On Bucks, your daily podcast on the Milwaukee Bucks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Backs him down. Giannis into the lane. Giannis spinning.
Welcome to Locked On Bucks. I'm Eric Mame, Milwaukee Bucks reporter at The Athletic Wisconsin, and joining me as always is my good friend and the founder of BrewHoop.com, Frank Madden. And bringing you today's episode is the 608 show. It's a 608 show, Wisconsin-based Wisconsin talk you won't find anywhere else. You can find the 608 show wherever you get your podcast. I'll have some more on that a little bit later in the episode, but if you're curious, host Corey Kaiser dives into everything Wisconsin sports with a raw and comedic style you won't find anywhere else. Recent guests include Monty Ball, Zach Showalter, Joe Schobert, and Jack Sitchie, excuse me. So not just your normal sports conversation, but a deeper dive into all of their lives as well. That's the 608 show. I will talk to you a little bit more about that later on. Now, with all of that being said, Frank, how you doing, buddy?
Good. Still kind of counting down the days here till the playoffs, but I think we have at least a couple more interesting regular season games left. I, of course, am greatly interested in each and every Bucks game, as I have been for, 27 years, for better or worse. So I'm not losing interest just as the Bucks are becoming really good. But I think when we're looking at the calendar, a lot of these games, games against the Hawks or Nets are like easy wins by any stretch. I think, especially with injuries and potentially strategic rest forthcoming at some point, Bucks could lose any game on the schedule. But I think there are a couple games on the calendar that are particularly interesting for varying reasons, whether it's narrative or just showing kind of how the Bucks stack up against, either in Philly's case, a team in the East, or Houston's case, just the MVP narrative. But obviously, first things first, we've got a national TV game against James Harden and the Houston Rockets. And let me ask you this. Do you have the feeling that this single game is going to have an outsized impact on the MVP voting this year? Or do you think that voters are going to be able to separate whatever outcome happens on Tuesday from kind of the broader resumes of these two guys?
I was asked something similar about this today when I was talking with Ted Davis on his radio show, and I think what's kind of interesting with just any MVP race is that, the people that are going to be voting on it, obviously, there's some national people, but then there's also local people. So I think you're always going to have a local guy like myself that is covering the Bucks. I watch every Bucks game, typically a second time I'll go through it and try to do that as well. And then that's how I assume most people that have that are covering a team are handling it. And, that means I get to watch other teams sometimes, but people that are covering from a national perspective, maybe they're able to kind of pick and choose and watch some more games, and maybe they're able to watch some more of James Harden and some more of Giannis, and maybe they're able to get some more of that. But it is always interesting to me how much a single game can kind of weigh in to anyone's voting. And I feel like with a local person, I feel like you could kind of if you happen to see, if you're a Miami Heat writer and you saw Giannis play garbage against the Heat most of the time, that's a team he's kind of struggled against throughout his career, maybe you don't think Giannis is quite as good as other people would have. And maybe that changed this year, is you saw him kind of take it to the Heat in these last two games. But you know, maybe it also didn't. So I do think there is something about, you know, a single game and seeing something in that single game that can kind of stick out in your mind. So I do think it will take on some level of importance. And, you know, I think one, it's, you know, because they are going to head to head, and, you know, two, recency bias is very much a thing. Like just period. It is a thing. And, you know, are there going to be a lot of people out there that remember the Bucks 116-109 victory over the Houston Rockets on January 9th? I would doubt it, right? Like, I can't imagine there are a ton of people that are going to be like, oh yeah, I remember that game for sure. So I do think it will have, you know, at least some level of importance, and especially because I think in recent weeks, anyone else that was possibly in the conversation has faded away, and it is just Giannis and Harden now, and that's it. Like, those are your two MVP candidates. So I do think it probably will take on a little bit of outsized importance, just because for me, I think that's kind of how I believe the human brain works, and, you know, how people watching basketball works, is that, you know, at the end of the season, those things are going to stick in your mind a little bit more. And then you have a matchup between these two guys, and I just feel like that's going to kind of be how it goes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just sort of human nature, I think, for, you know, a lot of people, especially people who, you know, as you were kind of alluding to, don't necessarily watch the Bucks or the Rockets, for that matter, night in and night out. And I think the Bucks, certainly, just because people didn't come into the season thinking they would need to watch the Bucks that much, Bucks, you know, didn't, they got certainly a nice bump in national TV games. I'd have to look. I mean, I can't imagine they had as many as the Rockets, just coming off of last year when the Rockets had the best record in the league. You know, like, I think Rockets certainly, you'd say, have been more in the spotlight just because of their, you know, admirable history of success of late. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a convenient reference point, referendum type thing. And again, like, I think if it's, you know, a reasonably close outcome, I don't think, you know, because Harden scored five more points or something, that, you know, they're going to like shade James Harden. But I think it's more just if Giannis or Harden struggles, or if, you know, one of the teams just gets blown out. And especially if the Bucks were to, you know, lose at home, I think that would, you know, be more of a feather in Harden's cap than, you know, if the Bucks, for instance, beat the Rockets by almost any margin. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate just because, you know, I think it's easy to get caught up in kind of the narratives, and, you know, we saw it, ironically, Harden was, you could argue, the victim of this a couple of years ago, and, you know, Westbrook hit just some really dramatic game winning shots, you know, it was against the Magic and the Nuggets. He hit just some crazy, you know, buzzer beating type shots to win games when he won the MVP. And, you know, it kind of reinforced this narrative of, like, you know, Westbrook was the guy, and, you know, this finisher and kind of doing all these amazing things that season. And obviously his numbers were incredible as well. But, you know, the flip side was Harden was on the better team and arguably had better, you know, actually was maybe more impressive in terms of overall numbers, even though he didn't average a triple double. So, you know, I think we've seen this happen before. But the flip side as well is I kind of look at it, and especially as somebody who, you know, I mean, the Rockets are the team I watch the most, other than the Bucks, because my wife is a Rockets fan. I don't know if you knew that, Eric.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because, I mean, we mentioned it a few weeks ago when we were talking about Paul George and could he, like, kind of continue to wedge himself in this debate at all. And again, not that we were thinking he could win the MVP, but could he potentially play, like, a spoiler role somehow? And I think at this point, with him getting injured, his shoulder injury, and then he's still had some impressive performances, but for the most part, you know, he just hasn't quite been playing at the same level since he came back from injury. Thunder have, you know, had some losses and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, George is, I think the idea of George kind of being like a spoiler is probably not going to happen. You know, like, maybe he gets a second place vote here or there, but the idea of him stealing second place votes, potentially, I was arguing it was maybe more likely he might steal votes from Harden. But I think, some of the reason for that, namely that I think there's a lot of kind of Harden fatigue, which I don't think is really particularly fair. I think there are a lot of people that probably, I think there are kind of two countervailing things with Harden. On the one hand, I think because he scores, I mean, he has scored points better than anybody in basically three decades since Jordan's, maybe Kobe had that one season or Jordan's 87 season. He has scored points better than pretty much anybody we've seen in recent memory. And if there's one thing that the average, you know, unscientific MVP voter cares about, it's guys who just go and get buckets. So on the one hand, you know, that tends to get weighted probably more than it should. Flip side, a lot of people, and I wouldn't say I'm one of these people. I don't think you necessarily are either, but there's a lot of people who also don't like the way he scores baskets or, you know, kind of judge him for, you know, the ISO game or, you know, because he draws too many free throws. And again, I don't really view these as negatives in his game. I think they're things that make him incredible and unstoppable. But I think there is also probably a sizable base. There's kind of like maybe the subset of people who are going to be like, oh, look at all the points he's scoring and kind of just overweight that. And then, but I also think there's going to be a number of people and like a group, a block maybe in that vote who are going to look at Giannis and Harden and be like, I don't really like Harden. I don't love the way he plays the game. He won it last year. Like Giannis is easy. I mean, it's not like hard to justify voting for Giannis. So Giannis becomes like kind of a nice, like, you know, more positive, like, narrative to vote for. And obviously I don't want to diminish Giannis's numbers because I think they're MVP worthy, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how it plays out. And I guess that's just a long way of saying, I wish we didn't care that much about what happens on Tuesday night, but I am kind of nervous that we will. And especially because Harden is the more likely guy to have like just an explosive crazy game, whereas Giannis has just generally been a lot more consistent. There was I don't know if it was Ian Levy who wrote it, but I think it was on FanSided. There was a story today about how like Harden has had these just massive outlier individual performances, and he's also had just some like negative games using they were using DRE as a metric, game by game DRE. Versus Giannis, who has never had a negative game all season, but just hasn't had the peak. So it's just the consistency thing, right? So, you know, hopefully the kind of slow and steady of Giannis wins the race here. You know, and we kind of saw that in the last game between these two teams where he started really slowly, but, you know, by the end of the game, he's got 27 points, 20 rebounds, the Bucks win. And, you know, the narrative was Harden scored 38, and it was like, oh, but the Bucks kind of threw him off. And, you know, Bucks kind of figured some stuff out. So, you know, again, I think winning the game is you know, the nice thing is job one is win the game, just like every other night. But I am curious if either team, how much, let's just say this. I think both teams, both coaches want their guy to win the MVP. I think they both want to hold down the other guy and for their guy to play extra, you know, get extra good numbers and everything on Tuesday night. I do think there is some of that to this. But I'm curious to see, like, you know, how does that actually translate into what we see on the court? And I worry a little bit that just because Giannis is an inside player and Harden is literally like, you know, you can't even really easily trap him, that I don't know. I'm a little paranoid that maybe the Rockets might just try to like just completely zone the hell out of Giannis and just throw a ton of bodies at him and you know, basically give just the Bucks a ton of open threes because they don't want Giannis to beat him. So I don't know. That's maybe a little bit of my concern as someone who obviously wants Giannis to win the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll end up being interesting. And I think for, you know, like the first time in this entire season, maybe the entire time that he's been the Rockets head coach, like D'Antoni has actually been worrying about Harden's minutes load, which is a pretty strange thing to see. The other night he had under 30 minutes, and you know, I think he's done it twice. He's been under 30 minutes twice in like the last like week and a half, 2 weeks, which obviously with as many times they've played him over 40 minutes a game, and you know, as many times as like how few or how little they've played him under 30 minutes a game, like it's I mean, just kind of thinking through all of that, it's like, oh wow, like are we actually going to see Giannis and Harden play a similar amount of minutes tomorrow night? Like, is that something that might actually happen on Tuesday, or is it going to be, you know, the same thing as like it always is, where, you know, Harden plays way more, Giannis doesn't play as much, or, you know, maybe the Bucks run out to a victory, and Giannis isn't able to put up his numbers. And I would hope that's not the case, and I hope we just get a genuinely good basketball game, because this Rockets team has been playing good basketball down the stretch, and you know, maybe peaking at the right time. So I do hope that, that is kind of what ends up happening there. But you know, the Harden fatigue, I think, is to me real, just because I've never in my life had and heard so many conversations about whether or not you should like or dislike the way this person plays basketball or whatever. And it's just like, you know, I actually got into an argument with a couple friends about this over the weekend, but I was like, Harden might be the best passer in the league. Like, I don't think it's, I argued for that he's the best passer in the league right now. And because he scores so often, because he has the ball so often, you know, I think there people want to make the argument that, you know, if other players had that many opportunities and the attack was so centered around them, then, you know, they could do the same thing. But I do think Harden is just so supremely talented. But ultimately there's people that don't like him because he is able to get to the line and he shoots a bunch of step back threes, which, you know, I think look pretty cool when they go in, but obviously there are nights where they don't go in. And that fatigue and that just, you know, maybe more general dislike of his game, I think are going to be interesting to me for some of the people that I was talking about, where, you know, if you're trying to watch the whole NBA, you're not always going to see every single game and you're going to see limited amounts of these people. So it's like, okay, so if for two games this year you saw Harden and on both those nights he happened to shoot 13 threes and only hit three of them, and you know, he had two of those like really bad defense possessions, which he's really cut down on this year, but if you saw those games, couldn't it kind of happen where you're just like, well, you know, he's not very consistent, he has games like that, and well, you know, Giannis doesn't have those. Like, so I am really curious about all those things. Or, you know, in the same way, you know, if Giannis had a game where a team zoned him up and you didn't see him make many shots from the outside, and you know, it was a little bit of a slower night for him. And again, like you said, he doesn't really have bad nights, but just a slower night, like maybe that sticks out to you. So I am really curious to see kind of how the voting goes. I think it's going to be really, really close, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be really tight. So we'll have to see kind of how that wraps up. Anything else you're thinking about with MVP in regards to Tuesday night?
No, I'm unfortunately going to be traveling, for kind of Tuesday during the afternoon. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch, the game live or maybe just the end of it. So that's a bummer. By the way, Eric, you may want to find somebody else to podcast with tomorrow night. I'm telling you this now. Awkward. It's going to be fun, right? I mean, you know, I mean, look, we're in almost April and we're talking about, you know, well, the last 2 weeks of the season aren't that interesting because the Bucks probably have the best record in the league sewn up. But hey, like, you know, there's an MVP narrative to care about with Giannis. In terms of, you know, like, what conversations would you have dreamt of having last summer when we, you know, kind of were seeing this team being put together and Mike Budenholzer come into place? This is pretty much like the dream scenario. So as much as, you know, we may not look at these last couple weeks of the season as massively indicative of what the Bucks are, or we may say, oh, well, fast forward to the playoffs. You know, I'm always kind of got also that little bango on my shoulder saying, hey, enjoy this. This is fun. You got a 55 win team. You've got 8 games left. You know, the magic number might be 4. So you know, hopefully you're close to having the best record locked up. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff that as much as people complain about the regular season, and we do it too a little bit. This is fun. Having a game at this point in the season where it feels like, you know, you got your home crowd, cheering on your MVP candidate against, you know, the other guy who's the obvious MVP candidate. So that's great. And I guess before we talk maybe about other games that might be of interest, any other thoughts on just this matchup? Obviously, we saw these teams play in early January, as you mentioned. That was one of the few games this season where Giannis went dunkless. I think that was like part of a random 3-game dunkless streak, which when you pointed it out on Twitter, Giannis called you out on. Giannis in the post game afterwards sounded, you know, jokingly hurt that you would even mention that. So clearly he's going to want to dunk on the Rockets just to stick it to you. But I do think it's an interesting matchup. We were talking about it in the context of like the Heat. We've seen it, you know, the Pacers had that game where they like, you know, randomly slowed down Giannis and then they haven't really been able to do much with him in the couple games since then. I don't think anybody that the Rockets have is really a Giannis stopper, whether it's Capella or Tucker or anything like that. I think the Rockets fall into that camp of teams that, you know, they're just going to probably foul him a lot and hope the refs don't call it. I think that'll be their MO yep. for the most part, which, you know, unless you have like an Embiid type guy or just like an enormous dude who can just sort of put his arms up and force Giannis to try to, you know, jump over a mountain. That's what most teams have to do. But any specific thoughts? I think either, you know, the way that the Rockets might try to defend the Bucks, especially Giannis, do you think they are just going to load up to try to keep him from doing stuff? And on the flip side, you know, we saw this somewhat novel defense from the Bucks, where they pretty much just literally put their arms up and stood on his left side to try to prevent him from driving to his left. But, you know, he still had lots of room to operate, and I think he eventually scored 38. Any thoughts on, like, I mean, do you think the Bucks just do the exact same thing? What are you expecting from the actual game itself, putting aside sort of the MVP narrative?
For me, I think the stuff defensively probably sticks out to me because, like you mentioned, Harden obviously goes off at the end. It was 42 points for Harden, but it did take 13 of 30 shooting, 6 of 16 for the three-point line, 10 of 11 for the free throw line. He had 9 turnovers as well. And, you know, I think obviously the way that the Bucks played was quite interesting. And, you know, some other teams have tried to be, I guess exaggerating their coverage on Harden in the same way, but obviously I don't know if anyone, I mean, no, even the Bucks didn't really have success stopping James Harden. It's just like how teams don't really have any success stopping Giannis. Like you just can hope that for a night you can possibly slow them down. And you know, I thought what was interesting in that game was that we obviously put a lot on Bledsoe and how impressive it was that, you know, Bledsoe was just exaggerating it so much. I compared it to, you know, when I was in middle school and I knew I was playing a lefty and I was like, well, I'm going to make him go right. And I literally just sat on his left hand. Like, that's how far Eric Bledsoe was going. And we found out after the game, obviously, that that wasn't actually the Bucks' plan, that he just kind of did it on his own, which is, you know, one of the, I think, major point. Like one of the major things you point to in this season when you talk about Bledsoe kind of getting his own set of rules from Mike Budenholzer, which I think has surprised us, but obviously he kind of did his own thing. And we talk about that and, you know, it was so incredible he did that. And then eventually George Hill, after a little bit of rough stretch, kind of did the same thing. But what was really good there was Brook Lopez.
Yeah.
That it was everything getting fed into Brook Lopez. And then, you know, when Harden would make the pass, like he normally does, like whether that was a little pocket pass to Capella or it was an alley-oop or whatever it was, Lopez was there and he was the one that, you know, was helping cause these turnovers. He was the one that was in a passing lane, tapping it out. He was, he was there blocking shots as well. On the night he ends it with 4 blocks, but those turnovers for Harden, like he was a big part of it. And they're just, that was kind of a part of just, if you're going to send in a first team all defense kind of resume video or highlight video or whatever you want to call it for Brook Lopez, like, that would probably be the game that you're going to circle. At the end of the night, Capella was 4 of 16 and, you know, just struggled to kind of have an impact on the game. He was 10 of 12 from the free throw line, but still 4 of 16 for 18 points. Like, you're going to definitely, live with that and be pretty happy with what you did there. So if those two guys can be as successful defensively with, you know, if the scheme is as exaggerated as it was the first time around, or if it's not as much, like if those two guys can be that effective defensively, I think that stands out. And then, you know, the last time they played, the Bucks only shot 27 threes. So they didn't end up getting a ton of threes off. It was one of those games where, you know, Brook Lopez was only 1 of 4. So not one where he ended up getting a bunch of threes off. And, I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see. Like, I mean, that's always the question about how teams are going to try to defend Giannis and the Bucks, but, it should be a fun one. I know that. Which way are you leaning with any of that?
I feel like the and we talked about it the other day, like, you know, you give Giannis a look, even if it's something he hasn't seen before, maybe, you know, you kind of beat him once, shame on him, you know, or I don't even think that's an applicable analogy. But anyway, like, he learns, right? He figures stuff out. Like, you may be able to trick him, yep, with one look, but he learns. And I think Harden, I mean, Harden's as smart and savvy as you're going to find a player in the league, right? So I think the surprise of the way they played him last time might have been fine for that game. I really don't. I just don't think that's, I don't know. I get very nervous the idea of trying to do that again, and thinking that that's going to work. I think even if you make him go right, I mean, it's not like they were forcing him to go right and really kind of like challenging him. I mean, they were like almost giving him like a free run towards the paint going to his right. And yeah. One thing that I can tell you from having watched Harden and the Rockets of late is I feel like he's shooting more kind of these little like kind of 8-foot kind of floater shots. And he's so dangerous from that part of the court, because, you know, when he has that shot and, you know, half the time he's just going to lob it up. If you cheat out towards him a little bit, he's going to lob it up to Capella from the dunker spot. So I think that's what made Brook Lopez's performance in that game in Houston just so remarkable. Like you were alluding to, I don't know if Brook Lopez has played a better defensive game all season than in that one, to be as disruptive as he was. I mean, he was literally playing 2-on-1 or 1-on-2, you know, like seemingly every other possession, the way the Bucks were basically, you know, begging Harden to attack from the right side. So I'm very wary of that approach working twice. I think part of the problem though is, you know, Chris Paul wasn't available in that game. I can't remember who else was injured that time around, but, you know, the Rockets are more like the Rockets of old right now. They've got kind of their full complement of guys. Eric Gordon has been shooting the ball really well of late. You know, he had basically as explosive a first half as Harden the other night against the Pelicans, which, okay, maybe the Pelicans don't, you know, they're kind of mailing it in to some extent, but you know, he was just bombing from deep, and he's a guy who has, you know, he started the season shooting really poorly from three. And so he's one of those guys, you just, on some level, you just kind of pray that he misses shots, because, you know, otherwise you're having to defend him out to the logo practically. So I think it's going to be really kind of an interesting thing to watch. I'm very curious what, again, kind of what we alluded to, like, would they put Capella on Giannis? I don't recall them doing that last time they played really much. Did they? I don't really remember them doing it. Yeah. I mean, that seems like kind of an obvious thing to do just because Capella moves his feet really well. And obviously you'd much rather have Capella closer to the basket rather than having to defend Brook way outside. So it'll be interesting kind of a thing to watch if they do that. You know, we'll have to see. I mean, just looking forward to the game. I mean, you know, the Rockets have not been great defensively this season overall. So, you know, certainly this is a team that you can score against, and teams have been able to take advantage of them. But you know, ultimately I think Harden and I'm very curious to see, you know, do we see the Bucks go to switching at some point early? Do they try to throw a trap at him on occasions? Like, kind of what do they do with him to try to slow him down a little bit? And you know, you almost don't even think about Chris Paul much, and he's been playing was not looking great kind of when he first came back from his injuries, but has been playing much better of late. And obviously he's a guy that you know, especially last year, was a tremendous kind of iso that elbow jumper type shot, which again is a shot the Bucks live with, right? And so I think that'll be very interesting to see, because if you kind of look at any guy on this roster who shoots the type of shots that the Bucks want to give up, it's Chris Paul. And I think a couple years ago, last year, I want to say in Houston, we saw him kind of salt the game away by hitting a bunch of those shots, it seemed like. And I feel like there were a lot of switches on John Henson in that game that didn't really work out that well. So we'd be very curious to see kind of if Paul maybe is the guy that, gets overlooked a little bit with understandably the focus on Harden and Giannis.
Yeah, it should be a fun one. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm also looking forward to telling all of you about a podcast that you need to put in your rotation. It's called The 608 Show. 608, the area code for, yes, Madison. You all figured it out because you are very sharp and smart. And actually, maybe you didn't, because maybe you don't listen from the state of Wisconsin, and you wouldn't know that that is the area code for Madison. But that is the name of the podcast, The 608 Show. Host Corey Kaiser dives into everything Wisconsin sports with a raw and comedic style you won't find anywhere else. How about this for a recent list of former Badger guests: Monty Ball, Zach Showalter, Joe Schobert, and Jack Sitchie. And not just your normal sports conversation, but a deeper dive into their lives. How about that? Also, insight on the Bucks playoff push, the 2019 crew looking to build on last year's run, and all the offseason notes in Green Bay. Everything Wisconsin sports has to offer. New shows drop on Friday, so don't miss out. Head to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts and search The 608 Show. The 608, all one word, show. While you're at it, visit their website, the608.com. Words, not numbers. Again, that's the608.com for videos, their message board, and more. It's The 608 Show, Wisconsin-based, Wisconsin talk you won't find anywhere else. Find The 608 Show wherever you get your podcasts. Frank, before we wrap it up, and we're going to keep this a little bit on the shorter side, but you know, before we wrap it up, one of the things that we were kind of talking about, and you had mentioned a little bit, was, you know, as you go through this season, I think we find ourselves thinking about, like, oh man, there's not a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to anymore. You know, the game to game stuff is a little bit boring because, well, you know, the Bucks are just so good and so much better than a bunch of these teams. Like, I think you saw in that game on Sunday, it was just like, oh, okay, Giannis is going to come in and he'll let the Cavs know that he's much better than them for a quarter or so. And then everyone will just kind of go about their business. And if he needs to turn it on for a little bit more, he'll do so. And in the end, they'll win. So, you know, a lot of these games haven't been incredibly exciting. So the Bucks have the Rockets on Tuesday. Obviously, we've talked a long time about that one. But after that, they have the Clippers at home on Thursday. Then they go on a 3-game road trip against the Hawks, the Nets, and the Sixers. Come back home next Saturday for a game against the Nets. It's a back-to-back on Sunday with the Hawks, and then wrap up the season on Wednesday, April 10th, against the Oklahoma City Thunder in Milwaukee. Are you thinking about any of those games? Like, do any of those, you know, have some, you know, kind of level of importance that you're thinking about, or, you know, like the way that you're thinking about them, you know, maybe Brooklyn with some playoff stuff, just generally being a good team, a team that tends to give Bud a good show, the Sixers, the Thunder, what do you think?
Well, the two best teams record-wise other than the Rockets are obviously the Sixers and the Thunder. I think the last game of the season at home, the game against the Thunder, you hope that the first seed will be locked up by then. You hope that the Bucks will be in full, just sort of, you know, play for, get ready for the playoff mode. So I can't project a lot of, instructiveness into that game, just because I would guess there's probably a better than 50-50 chance that guys like Giannis or Middleton or, you know, Bledsoe, that those guys might not even play. So I kind of throw the Thunder game out. I think the Sixers game would be the obvious one that jumps out. Okay, now it's possible the Bucks may have the first seed locked up by then. That is from today. That's 5 games away. So with the magic number at 4, you know, any combination of Bucks wins and Raptor losses over the next 4 games could lock up that before they even play the Sixers, which would be great. But look, I mean, the Bucks have not lost a season series other than the ones to the Suns all year. They have, you know, at least tied or have won every series against, you know, at this point, the East. And so obviously, you know, the Sixers just beat you at home. The Sixers probably feeling pretty good about themselves of late. So, yeah, I mean, going into Philly and being able to beat the Sixers, you'd have 2 days of rest going into that game. So it's not like you're in some adverse rest situation or anything like that. I think that would be certainly in terms of just like a psychological statement type game thing. You know, I don't know if how hard I believe in that type of thing. But to the extent I do, I think, yeah, you know, as a fan, I'd love to see the Bucks win that game. I think the Bucks would, yeah, they'd love to, you know, stick it to them. You know, Ben Simmons, a effing baby, as Giannis had pointed out. Of course you want to beat an effing bunch of babies. So I think that game has significance just because if for no other reason, then I just don't want to go into the last week of the season having to listen to like all the takes about the Sixers being the actual like best team in the East and how they've come together and blah, 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 blah. You know, I think a little bit of Tim Bontemps had a story for ESPN, I think yesterday, where it kind of was like, you know, Raptor centric, and it was, you know, it was a story that he did up in Toronto, and, you know, kind of like, I mean, I think the headlines and tweets around it made it sound like it was more apologetic towards the Raptors than it actually was. But, you know, kind of the narrative was like, oh, well, we're not worried about the number one seed. We're worried about the playoffs. And part of me is like, yeah, I don't think you're going to increase your likelihood of, you know, winning by not having the first seed. You know, I know you guys didn't work last year when they had the one seed and they lost to LeBron, but, you know, I don't know. It felt like,
well, you know, Frank, you know, I'd like to be a millionaire, but you know, like there's just so many problems with it that, yeah. You know, like, do I really want to do it? No, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, I don't really want to make a bunch of money. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Again, I agree. It wasn't quite like the actual article is not that apologetic.
It wasn't that apologetic, but you know, it's kind of making the sort of this idea of like, oh, the, you know, like, oh, who are these teams that worry about being good in the regular season? And I mean, to be clear, the Raptors have the second best record in the league. So it's not like the Raptors are just like coasting through the regular season.
One other, while we're here, and I'm going to screw us up from going short because that's what I do. Ben Golliver, a part of Giannis Inc., mentioned on a podcast recently that, you know, he felt like, you know, the Bucks have been able to go out and, you know, win all these games and, you know, have the best record in the league because, you know, they've been really trying this season and, you know, they're given like 110% to get there. And, you know, that got back to me and I was just like, have the Bucks been giving that much effort? Like, I think to, you know, like the Warriors when they won 73 games, like, yeah, that really did feel like they were full on going for it. They wanted to win every game. And like, you know, I think how often like Giannis is rested in comparison to other season. And again, like, you know, maybe sometimes there was nothing you could do about the ankle or the knee or whatever. And like how many games other guys have rested. And it's just like, I don't know that I would agree with that assessment that the Bucks have given 110% to get where they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like this kind of thing too, where it's like, you know, on the one hand, I get sort of the argument that you look at teams like the Celtics are kind of the extreme example, like a team that has not lived up to its potential. Like you don't want to sleep on them because they have another level they can get to from where they are. But it's like, you know, and I think Ben and Andrew even kind of, you know, pointed out sort of the kind of recursiveness and cynicism of sort of this type of take, right? Because you also like can't punish like a team like the Bucks because they have figured out who they are and they know what they want to do and it just works, right? Like it's sort of stupid to sit around praising teams that haven't been as good because maybe they can be better, but are they actually going to be better than the team that is actually playing the best? You know, so I get it. You know, it's one thing if you're the Warriors, right? I mean, the Warriors have shown year after year that nobody can mess with them in the playoffs, you know, especially post Durant signing. Like, you know, this team just has been able to go to another level. And, you know, they got the scare with the Rockets last year. I think they are beatable. But until somebody does it, like, you know, I don't have some problem with people saying that the Warriors should be the favorites in the playoffs or anything like that, right? Like, yeah, sure. But yeah, I mean, to kind of give, and not that people are giving the Warrior treatment to the, you know, Sixers or the Raptors or something like that, isn't not that extreme, but, you know, especially with the Bucks' lack of playoff experience among kind of the core rotation guys, you know, I think there's this like tendency to overstate what the other teams have accomplished in the playoffs too. And, you know, it certainly is true. Like the Raptors have some players who have done that, you know, I mean, obviously, Kawhi and Danny Green in particular, I mean, they've won championships, right? Together, in fact. But, you know, that team hasn't really played that much together. And they haven't been as good as, you know, even last year's team overall in terms of, you know, just point differentials not close between this year's Raptors and last year's. And, you know, the Sixers, they've won one playoff series. It's more than what the Bucks core has done. But, you know, it's not like they're some team that, you know, you're not talking about like the 86 Celtics or something like, or the Warriors that, you know, have this great bank of experience, right? I mean, they beat the Heat and then they got crushed by the Celtics. So, yeah, I mean, I wish the Bucks could say they'd won a playoff series, but it's not like there's some night and day difference. And, you know, I don't know. I think it's Boston's probably the most ironic because it's just amazing to me how, like, the number one, like, every smart person and even every dumb person who watches the NBA seems to agree that you need a superstar to be an elite team. And you need that, like, not just like top 10 player, you need like the uber star to win championships. And yet, like, because the Celtics are kind of the Celtics and they had that nice run without Kyrie and Hayward last year, like, they've kind of like, I don't know, like the whole narrative of the Celtics being like the most talented team kind of like got out there in the East, at least in spite of the fact that they are clearly at a disadvantage in terms of the most important part of the talent equation compared to the Bucks, compared to the Raptors, compared to the Sixers. Like, I don't know, like it's, and again, this is like, I'm obviously digressing severely here, but it's just funny how like people try to kind of talk themselves into different teams. And again, not to diminish or dismiss the Celtics, as I mean, again, I'm not going to dismiss them, but even in the abstract, like when you just kind of go back and do the math on like why they were so hyped coming into the season, look, I get it. They were very good last year, had a really nice run in the playoffs, but they barely beat the Bucks. The Sixers, like, you know, shit the bed. And then, you know, they played well at times, but ultimately, you know, lost again to one of the worst LeBron teams that we've seen, right? That literally didn't play defense and, you know, almost didn't care for, you know, half the playoffs. So, so the idea of just like crowning them and deeming them this juggernaut of talent, it's just sort of bizarre when they didn't have the one thing that everybody thinks you should have. And maybe part of it's because people just sort of, I think, treat Kyrie like kind of a sub superstar, and kind of people like to talk themselves into him as like a playoff superstar because of his track record in the finals and everything. But I don't know. It's just fascinating. I mean, again, like, we haven't had to experience this in Milwaukee, sort of the hot takes and, you know, everybody trying to figure out what they think and everybody trying to have an answer about what's real and what's fake heading into the playoffs, just because the Bucks haven't been good enough to demand to be part of that conversation. So, I don't know. Part of me is just like, I'm fine with people underestimating the Bucks. If, you know, with the injuries, if people want to say that, you know, they can't pick the Bucks anymore in the East, like, hey, that's fine. I'm happy for the Bucks to try to get under the radar a little bit, which is really hard when you're the best team in the league record wise. But if people want to do that, you know, again, I'm not going to scream from the mountaintops that the national media is biased or stupid, because I'd much rather have them be stupid and the Bucks prove them wrong than you know, the opposite, or even to have too much hype, too much pressure on this team, just because who knows? You know, it's that, I think, especially for a team like this, the kind of nobody believes in us side of it, I think could be something that, again, not going to make a huge difference, but maybe a little bit I think that's probably more helpful than the pressure of everybody saying you should be coming out of the East and, you know, contending for a championship.
Okay, that's it. We're out of time. We are done for the day. That is going to be the end of today's episode. I literally do not have any more time. So we can talk about whatever else we were going to talk about tomorrow or Wednesday.
Never.
Or Thursday.
Never.
Or never. Bucks Rockets. I'll find someone to podcast with me after that one. Today's episode was brought to you by The 608 Show. Wisconsin-based Wisconsin talk you won't find anywhere else. Find The 608 Show wherever you get your podcasts. Or head over to the608.com for videos, their message board, and more. That's going to be it for us for today on Locked On Bucks. For Frank Madden, I'm Eric Name. This has been Locked On Bucks. We will talk to you guys tomorrow.